Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Zap Forum podcast for January. This is actually our first Zap Forum podcast in podcast format, and today we have guest experts Jerry King of DataDirect and Patrick Smith of Xenos. And this is Ron Schmelzer, senior analyst with ZapThink.
And this is Jason Bloomberg, senior analyst with ZapThink. So we're really excited to be bringing you this new format for our Zap Forum. For those of you who have been participating in the Zap Forum throughout 2005, you're familiar with the webcast format. But keeping up with the pace of change in this industry, we are now moving toward an all-audio format that you can still download from our website, as well as listen on our website, as well as download and take with you on your iPods and listen to the Zap Forum whenever and wherever you like.
That's right. We've also gotten significant demand for our content syndicated. As you know, we have over 20,000 readers of our Zap Flash newsletter now. We have hundreds of people who have registered for a Zap Forum webcast, including people all over the world. And that's sad, but for India and Australia, it's just too early in the morning to attend our live webcast. We've gotten a lot of interest for people to have the recorded format, as well as people who wanted to forward it on to their colleagues. So given that it's harder to get people to attend in person than to do the recording, we thought we would bring you this podcast format in the most convenient form possible.
So the topic of today's podcast is business-to-business data integration in a SOA world. And Ron and I will talk just a bit about this topic, and then we will introduce Jerry King and chat with him for a bit, and then bring out Patrick Smith and have a few questions for him. And then basically we'll have an open discussion with these two guest experts basically uncover a variety of issues and interesting points as we go. So, Ron, why don't you get us started?
Yeah, sounds great. Well, as you know, ZapThink, we basically have been focused on service-oriented architecture for almost 5 years now. And a lot of the topic of discussion has usually been around the architectural issues of how do we actually go about designing a service-oriented architecture, building the methodology for developing services. So they really are loosely coupled, so they really are composable, so that they're giving us the business benefits of reduced cost of integration, increased flexibility, increased reuse, and all the great things that we expect from our IT going forward. But we haven't spent as much time looking at the lifeblood of these systems, right? So if we think about the bones and the vessels and the nerves of the IT organization being the various systems that we're trying to connect together, the blood is the thing that's flowing between them, and that's, in this case, really the data. And a lot of the problems we have, are especially around service-oriented architecture, is that even if we can get the systems to communicate with each other from contacting their interfaces together, the problem we have is that the systems may not necessarily understand the communication pattern that's flowing between them.
So one of the key parts of the architecture itself, our service-oriented architecture, is the services abstraction, where you have these loosely coupled services that abstract underlying capabilities, underlying application functionality, as well as data, so that the business can compose the services into business processes as they need in a flexible, agile manner. So this abstraction, as with any abstraction, does not actually reduce complexity. It basically masks complexity. There's still just as much complexity under the covers, but the goal is to have an architectural approach that provides a simpler, more agile, flexible interface. So data integration is essentially part of that magic that makes those services work as advertised. You still have the data integration problem in the context of SOA, but now it's even more important to be able to support those contracted service interfaces. So if you have a service that has to provide certain data with a certain response time, it's up to the infrastructure, including the data integration infrastructure, to provide for that capability. And so that's part of the challenge of data integration in the context of SOA.
Mm-hmm. As part of that challenge is actually we have really two separate problems that relate to the fact that service-oriented architecture as a design principle really doesn't specify exactly how do companies deal with the differences in the data and the data formats between systems, and the fact that we want to have loosely coupled services, but at the same time, we need to have specific understanding of the data itself, the so-called semantic challenge, right? A lot of people think that service-oriented architecture as an approach by itself will solve all integration problems. But really what it does is it solves a certain class, a of integration problems, just as certain other technologies solved other classes of integration problems. We've sort of notched our way up that integration zipper. If you're familiar with the ZapThink metaphor, we've had since, I think, the mid-2003 timeframe around the fact that integration problems nearly notch ourselves one level higher after we've solved lower one, level ones. Eventually, we have to solve the issues of semantic integration. And it's really two kinds of issues with semantic integration as it relates to SOA. In the one case, there is the how do I deal with the data itself as it flows between services, or you can think of data as a service, if you will. It's like data as part of that communication between services. But there's another aspect to it, and that is that all the manipulations and the things that we do to data, we can think of those as operations of as part of our architecture as data services. All the things we do as far as transformation, manipulation of data, those are things that we do as part of the pipeline for working with information. That's just important as information. So these are some of the things that we'd actually like to address and talk about as part of this web podcast today with our great guest experts who are both actually really good experts on the topic of both data as a service, data services, B2B, and all the issues relating to that, XML web services, and other new technologies.
So this problem of data integration is tough enough within the enterprise, but when you deal with a business-to-business scenario where you have two organizations that want to communicate via automated interfaces to each other, so it's not just sending faxes or making phone calls, but actually getting systems to communicate with each other in an automated fashion, the data integration problem is many times more complex because now loose coupling is essentially a requirement. That is, there's no way for company A to have control over company B's internal workings or vice versa. So there has to be some sort of resolution of the semantic issues and the other data integration issues in order for that sort of business-to-business communication, automated communication to take place. So that's one of the challenges, that's one of the key challenges that we're going to be discussing today, not just data integration, but business-to-business data integration in SOA world. So Ron, are we ready to introduce our first speaker?
Oh, that was the key sound effect, Nag. Yes, we are. And maybe I'll introduce the first speaker. And we have one of our guest experts here. It's Jerry King, who, let me make sure I have his title right here. You are the VP of Product...
VP of XML products at Data Direct Technologies.
Data Direct Technologies, which is a division of Progress Software. And so, Jerry, why don't you introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got here, and maybe address some of these, what you see as some of the key data integration issues that come.
Sure, thanks.
Run XML and web services. Go ahead.
Good. Thanks for having me on today, guys. At Data Direct, I actually have the opportunity to manage two different products. One is Stylus Studio, which is an XML development environment, and the other is a new XQuery implementation from Data Direct called Data Direct XQuery, oddly enough. And I think both of these technologies, one a tool, one a component, speak directly to this notion of building data services, as you described. One of the things that we looked at and how our customers are creating these loosely coupled composite applications is that they're frequently needing to bridge existing information systems with new applications, and in order to do that, they need to aggregate and transform legacy data, relational data, XML data sources, to those who are starting to work on the web with web services or use new XML database products. And the key to these data services, you need to be able to aggregate and transform this data and expose it really as a new federated view. That federated view usually is XML, then can be consumed, just as you described, up further up the zipper by higher level applications or services. So my goal in this current role really is to provide those developers with the tools to build the XML pieces and parts, as well as hopefully facilitate the adoption of XQuery as a new query language, which we hope is going to emerge as really a preferred method for building data-level SOA services.
So Jerry, what do you mean by federated view of data? Federation is a general concept, but what do you mean as you apply it to data?
So consider an insurance claim form coming in to some provider from a third-party broker. That claim form has probably got some type of adherence to an industry standard like a CORD would specify what a claim form would look like, and it comes to that provider's web portal in some form of XML. Now, that provider may well have done some work already to use XML as an internal integration format, but it's likely not going to match the ACCORD format. So the first step into this federated view is get this incoming claim form into a view you can consume it. And then the federated view comes in, well, now it's probably missing pieces and parts. It needs to be validated. You need to know that this is your customer. And all that data, it's in a relational database. And so before your back-end system can actually consume this claim form as either being valid or complete, you need to enhance that incoming data with data out of your own systems. And therefore, you end up with a view that federates pieces of data both from internal and external data sources and then presents it to your back-end systems as a properly formatted transaction, let's say.
Mm-hmm. So by federation here, are we talking about maybe one or maybe both ideas of the fact that the data is coming from multiple data sources, and we have, you know, in the first case, I guess, just trying to get data from those various different systems together? Or are we talking about the case that the data itself doesn't have a 100% overlap, right? You know, so even if you're getting data from multiple data sources that relate to the same thing, let's say a patient record, you know, the different data sources are concerned with different parts of the picture. So are you saying that the challenge is really one of really aggregation and trying to normalize information across the different data sources?
I think that's also a true statement. Aggregation is key to many of the applications that we see our customers building with XML. XML being the lingua franca, if you will, that they can use to pull the disparate data for sources, the formats, into one that then can be manipulated easily and then presented in some kind of unified or federated view. That output of this data service may be used to feed a transactional system, maybe put on a bus, or it may simply be a piece of data that you're actually going to use then to report on. You're going to display it. You're going to present it to someone trying to make a decision or to a customer looking at you through a web portal.
So, one of the other questions is around data. I mean, we talk a little bit about SOA, we're talking about services, but we're also talking about XML. I mean, what do you see as sort of the role of XML in this whole discussion around federated access to data and heterogeneous sources and all that sort of stuff we're talking about here?
Well, I think XML solves a really basic problem of data integration. And where we first began to see it used is actually behind the firewall and many large corporations when they're trying to figure out how to come up with something like a unified customer view. And rather than try and merge everything into some enterprise model, what XML does is gives a little more flexibility and also provided these customers with a format and structure that they could describe this customer view without having it locked down tight into some relational database schema, something that was easily mutable and adaptable to whatever application needed to use that customer view. So one, it becomes an easy-to-use language for data exchange. And the next thing that happened with XML, of course, were various standards for transforming XML, like a style sheet, for validating the XML, like DTDs or XML schemas. And now lately with XQuery, a new candidate recommendation at this point, but hopefully soon to be standard for querying XML. So as SQL is to relational data, XQuery is to XML, you might think. So XML has been adopted as an integration standard, I guess is the first point I want to make, and has been then matured to provide more and more programming capabilities around that data, so for aggregation and transformation, essentially.
So what are some business-to-business implications in particular, whether it's XML for business-to-business use or federated views of data for business-to-business use?
Well, one of the applications implications you mentioned are the reduced cost of integration. If you consider that most analysts, in fact, I'm sure including yourselves, would say that data integration is almost always a costly and complex, time-consuming process. In fact, I've heard the number 70% thrown around as describing the level of effort required for a typical systems integration project. And when you really look at what's going on in that data integration logic, it's a lot of hand coding, stuff that's not only hand coded, but actually is quite brittle. It really doesn't survive change to system A or system B. So the code, in other words, is very sensitive to the kind of change in environment or even the intended usage. Net result is that developers often end up writing a lot of throwaway code and spend a good chunk of their time doing it. What XML does, I think, is solve quite a bit of this problem by providing that lingua franca, if you will. And where you first start seeing this come out is the XML schemas that show up for almost every industry sector you might imagine out there to facilitate exchange within the organizations in that sector. So you've got a language that's being used now as a standard programming practice that is more flexible and adaptable because just the way XML works. And then you've got industry sectors that are starting to now describe how documents should appear by way of these XML schemas. And the hand coding programming problem starts to diminish as people are able to use a more flexible language to describe the data aggregation and transformation and take advantage of industry schemas that show them the way.
Well, great. Well, one of those challenges, you talked a little bit about XML and talked a little bit about XQuery. Is like, you know, to what extent is there really such thing as a standard XML anyways? I mean, obviously XML is a pretty flexible data definition format. So, people putting stuff into XML, there's really no expectation as to, what that schema looks like or anything. So do you see, XQuery as being sort of the solution to, to the problems of data integration, even though companies are using XML? Maybe you can frame it for people who aren't familiar with XQuery a little bit as to how that solves some of these problems.
Okay. Well, first of all, XQuery, or XML query, is under development by the W3C, and as I mentioned, is nearing a candidate recommendation status. And its job is to allow or provide really a native XML query and transformation language. In XQuery, the query and transformation logic operates on XML views of data, so that's important. In order to use an XQuery, the underlying data sources need to be surfaced as XML. But the important thing is that the XQuery does not depend on the data's physical structure. Like SQL, I guess, the query describes really in a declarative fashion the mapping between the set of input tables and an output table or result. And that underlying data provider, JDBC driver or database client in the SQL world, for example, takes that SQL and executes it against the relational database. And so, to some degree, the application's shielded from the underlying database platform. XQuery implementations will mimic this and be similar to the SQL paradigm. So, for example, the DataDirect XQuery implementation underneath the covers is accessing relational data through its JDBC technology, accessing XML data sources, and then bringing the result set back to the client application, where it's manipulated then as an XML result set and then transformed through the XQuery and then presented back to the user or the calling program as a XML result. So what you have here is that level of abstraction you talked about, the hiding of complexity, I suppose, and also in implementations like DataDirect, the ability to actually, underneath the cover, surface relational data or SQL from SQL-based databases as XML and be able to aggregate that directly with XML and return a single XML result set.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Well, I guess I have one last question for you, and we're going to bring out our next guest shortly, and that is that, we also talked a little bit about data-level services, and something that I think is unique. We talked a little bit about getting data out and federating data, but what do you see happening as far as like the treatment of those operations themselves as services that people can compose together as part of their business processes? I mean, are you seeing any traction there? Are you seeing any movement? Are people doing anything?
Well, we are. I think it goes back to what I was just saying about XQuery, you can really have completely different storage systems and wildly different data structures and applications. As long as that underlying data can be exposed as XML, it all works. So what this is doing really is opening up a really endless set of opportunities for application developers to pull data from almost any source, internal, external to the organization. And so long as the that data that they surface can be integrated and current and correct, they can meet a lot of these requirements for data integration we were talking about earlier. They're usually pretty costly. Mm-hmm. I think a great example of this is what's happening in the supply chain management arena, mm-hmm. Where many other applications that have to integrate data from various sources to present unified customer or product information, for example, are being implemented. And not only for within the corporation, let's say in terms of their legacy applications, but if you're a vendor and you're bringing in applications that are going to fit into a supply chain or a CRM environment, you not only have to do your own integration, but you've got to integrate with all the applications that are in that customer environment. So I think XML becomes a tool for up and down that zipper you talk about, not just for data level integration, but actually as a way of integrating and configuring these higher level applications that are providing things like supply chain management and customer relationship management capabilities.
Thank you very much, Jerry, and we will bring you back in just a few minutes, but we wanted to introduce our second guest expert, Patrick Smith, who's Director of Product Line Management at Xenos. So, Patrick, why don't you introduce yourselves a bit and talk just briefly about what Xenos does, and then we will get you started with some of the questions as well.
Okay, great. Thanks, Jason and Ron, for having me on as well. Jerry, always good to talk with you. Xenos has been around for a little over 25 years, and the company has always been focused on finding ways to, we say, liberate, if you will, data from you know, systems that are obviously proprietary in the back office. And we focus on, you know, helping our customers find ways to repurpose that data, reuse it, deliver it elsewhere, and you know, essentially give them better support of business processes, you know, across the different lines of business. One of the things that we've begun moving into is enabling what is called the information supply chains. If you think about information that's trapped in various back office systems, you know, that and decision points that use that information or a combination of that information, it gets very, very, businesses find themselves sometimes trapped in waiting for the specific types of data they need, decisioning across different data sources to be able to enable faster business processes, faster change. So we've begun, you know, enabling or touting the concept of the information supply chain, bringing together different pieces of information and enabling processing engines and different legacy applications to be able to, you know, work together to produce information to the right person on the right channel sort of at the right time. And that's really where our focus has been, and a lot of our customers now are very much looking towards expanding out the number of expanding out the way in which they use the internet for things like electronic messaging, B2B transacting, and things like that. So our products are focused on those areas.
Well, very good. So why don't you talk a bit about that business-to-business situation? You know, how do you help out companies who are trying to communicate in an automated fashion with their suppliers or partners or customers?
Well, just like, you know, Jerry mentioned earlier how XML really only solves, you know, a very basic problem of data integration. It does, of course, you know, XML does enable quite a bit of data portability. Now, prior to XML, you had the concept of electronic data interchange, or EDI. And, you know, in the late 60s, EDI was developed and over, you know, through into the 1990s became a popular way for companies to exchange information or transactional information, be it insurance claims or purchase orders or things like that, through a proprietary network known as a VAN. And what's happened with, you know, sort of post the e-commerce build-out of websites and things like that, our companies are saying, well, look, you know, I need a way to transact with a greater number of business partners, and those business partners or trading partners, if you will, are not connected to the old traditional EDI network. I want to be able to do this over the internet. So you have the issues of exchanging data back and forth for the purposes of transacting, there's a whole suite of different data standards. Everyone has their own proprietary set of formats. So it becomes a big issue in terms of processing, you know, being able to handle incoming transactions, looking at them and saying, well, okay, what am I going to do with this data? You know, if it's a purchase order, what does a purchase order look like? Purchase orders may look different depending on who I'm getting them from. Same as invoices, things like that. So we're seeing a lot of traction in that area.
So you talked a little bit about EDI, and you said there's some problems with that. And so, you know, what do you see as some of the key ways that you know, XML web services and service-oriented architecture are going to sort of, you know, jump beyond the sort of traditional problems of EDI? As you mentioned, part of it was the, you know, the actual connection technology, the network, and we're moving to internet for that. But if I recall, the EDI format itself was pretty arcane, you know, not particularly flexible. And you know, they tried to establish one vocabulary, but I think, as we all know, every industry came up with their own flavor, and it was sort of a recipe for disaster. I mean, do you see web service SOA or XML solving any of those problems, or have we just sort of shifted the P, if you will, you know, and from one shell to the next, and we still have those same issues of data format and arcane issues?
Well, that's an excellent question. Absolutely, this is what we're seeing in the market right now from our customers is not so much a replacement for EDI, but using XML as another to go back to what Jerry said earlier about, you know, the abstraction layer on top of EDI, in the sense that you're right about EDI formats. Just very quickly for our listeners, I mean, if you're not familiar with EDI, set of standards, standard text files that, with fields and stuff in them that describe a purchase order, an invoice, a payment, an insurance claim, like such as, you know, accord claims, you know, a standard way of exchanging data. So as long as you could speak EDI and everybody stuck to the standard, then exchanging data would be no problem. And as you said a few minutes ago, you know, as the more and more companies got on the EDI bandwagon, fewer and fewer companies actually adhered exactly to the standard, which meant that you might get an EDI a document or a file from one of your trading partners, so you'll get an invoice from one person, from one partner, and an invoice from a second partner. They should be formatted identical, but they're not. And so you then have to write code around extracting the data out of that format. And this is where XML and web services begin to play a role. Because if, as we move forward, more and more organizations are adopting their own internal XML format for exchanging business messages, business transactions between their internal systems, which is, of course, you know, a problem unto itself in terms of accessing what Jerry talked about earlier, which is the notion of federated data or being able to access data in disparate sources. But you also have the issue of when your business partner or your trading partner sends you a electronic transaction, you then have to extract that data or transform that data from whatever format it's in into your proprietary XML. And then, you know, perform a set of business rules on it to route it to where it needs to go. So in terms of wiring together disparate companies through the internet, technologies like web services allow two companies to exchange data through a web service interface. And as long as you've got the right tools on the back end to transform data from one format into another very quickly so you can get the transaction processed, you're able to streamline things much more efficiently. What you certainly avoid is the traditional issues of having to custom program your own software for processing or for extracting data from one EDI, an EDI format that is slightly different. The standard is not exactly adhered to by two different partners. You have to deal with that same invoice from two different partners in two different ways. And if you've got 150, 200, or thousands of trading partners, that's a lot of code to maintain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in the EDI days, we had there was nominally set formats, but there were a lot of gray areas, a lot of ambiguity, and a lot of those sort of fields, information fields that people just used any way they felt.
Right. I mean, it really came down to, and I use the invoice example. So, one trading partner says, we're going to send you an invoice for this type of product, and we use a 30-character field in the text file for our product name, and another partner says, oh, yeah, we'll send you the same EDI invoice, whatever number that happens to be, but we use 35 characters for the name of the product that
right.
or the service we're invoicing you for. Okay,
right, so.
Well, it may seem fairly straightforward, but it sounds relatively tame, except if you're the developer on the back end having to write code to handle those differently.
Yeah, so XML is a big step forward. I mean, you have the metadata are part of the document, which definitely solves a lot of the problems. But XML still has issues, right? You still have the Tower of Babel problem, where everybody under the sun has their own schema, and even when there are set industry schemas, it doesn't mean that every company is using them the same way. And even if you were to use the schemas the same way, it doesn't mean you have the same semantic understanding of the meaning of the terms. Simply because you have a tag that says part number doesn't necessarily mean that two companies understand the same thing by that term part number. So how do you sort of address this is sort of that P under the shell problem where, sure, XML solves a lot of issues but presents some of its own. So, how do you actually make progress in this issue?
Well, you actually exposed something very interesting there, which is that if you look at EDI and how there was a set of standards, but and they were adhered to, but all it takes is maybe, a 10% variance in adherence, and then, we're off base. The same is happening, as you mentioned, with XML. Everybody has their own internal format, and getting everyone to adhere to agree to a standard gets, very difficult, which is why what's very important in terms of integrating two businesses together is having the ability to do real-time data mapping and transformation. That is, taking data from one format, like taking an incoming file, electronic document, and being able to parse that document and say, oh, well, this field which says part actually means part name, part underscore name in my format, so I've got to map that data to this other field in this document. So in terms of going from what you have to take the incoming data and then extract that data so you can repurpose it and transform it into your internal format so that it can be processed correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And so the real-time transformation issue is something that really is, unless you can do that at very, very high rates of speed, high volumes, you run into a potential big obstacle in terms of integrating, with your business partners through the Internet.
Mm-hmm. Well, that actually brings up something that you had mentioned earlier, incorporating this transformation as part of that pipeline. Is that what you're referring to as the information supply chain? You had sort of briefly mentioned that, but I don't think we expounded as to what that is. I don't think people are familiar with the notion of the information supply chain. We're familiar with...
Well, if you think about supply chain management or supply chains today, like a manufacturing supply chain where a bunch of parts come together, and at each point in the chain you're doing some work on you're assembling some parts that are coming together and adding parts as you go down the assembly line, and out the door comes the final product. In the world of information supply chains, the concept behind it is that just like you have parts that come together to form a larger product, the information supply chain concept is the same, in that there's data that exists in reports, in databases, in PDF documents, and so on, that are around the organization, and there are decision points in the business process that rely on information from a variety of sources, and the stumbling block that organizations run into is getting access or collating that data, bringing it all together in one place, you know, perhaps in a web page where the person that needs to make a decision based on data from a variety of places, there's a stumbling block there that they can't do that. And if you can bring that information together, the decision can be made and then passed on to the next person in the chain. So it's about integrating together critical business information, or what we call into actionable information, information that drives the business process.
Well, very good. Thank you, Patrick. And let's get Jerry involved again. So, Jerry, what's your take on this data integration shell game that we were talking about, where EDI had its issues, we moved to XML, but we still had a lot of the same issues and a lot of new issues. So, what's your take on that?
Well, as I was listening, the first thing that struck me was how resonant that was with customer requirements we've been getting over the last couple of years. In fact, just past year, we implemented a whole convert to XML utility in Stylus, whose job is to take these EDI formats into XML. That's the key. You can't work with XML unless you have XML, and getting these disparate data formats is like EDIFACT or X12, and XML is the first step. And the next piece, that mapping capability, once you need to run them in real time at high volume, but even the mapping, you could prepackage like we do all the standard schemas in the world, if you like, but everybody has a slightly different take on that, and so you have to provide those end users, even in some cases developers usually, but with an ability to do some mapping to get that into an internal format that's consumable. So I guess the bottom line is you don't remove the pick and shovel work from data integration ever. All you ever try and do is make it easier and easier, right? Prepackage as much as you can. I think once you get into XML, the transformation of XML document A into XML document B becomes easier and easier through tools and standards, but you don't ever really get away from the work. So the game really is one of productivity, not work elimination.
Mm-hmm. Now both your companies are involved in sort of the data business, right? You're in that pick and shovel business, if you will. You're not eliminating picks and shovels.
Picks and shovels for the data miners.
Exactly. You're finding better tools, to make their job more efficient, but you're not getting the miner out of the coal mine, right?
Nope.
So the question is, how do you see, in both of your products and services, what is sort of the overlaps and what are sort of the synergies as far as what you guys are doing, to help make it easier for the users? And either of you could take it, and maybe there's some sort of a thing we can get out of both of you together on this.
Well, I'll start off real quick, if you don't mind, Jerry. We talked about since we're talking about B2B integration, Jerry brought up the notion of an incoming a CORD XML format, like an insurance claim, and it might be in the old. In terms of a CORD, you still have a lot of transactions that come in the old, what's known as AL3 format, which is the predecessor to the CORD XML format, and you've got to be able to, of course, get the data out of there and then put it on some kind of a bus, and that's where our product called, which is known as Terminal One. I've been in production a couple of years now. We're just brought out a new version of it, and essentially, it's the Terminal One's a bolt-on to your ERP system that enables it to. Whereas previously, you'd have to have some sort of integration platform to connect you up to an EDI network. Terminal One lets you do the same thing, but connect your ERP system up to the web so that you can then exchange the transactional information through the internet. However, as Jerry mentioned, there's still a lot of work to be done in terms of developer productivity and what needs to get on the back end. So what we provide is the ability to, take that incoming data, we can transform it, and we can route it to the appropriate back office system. But as part of that, there's a lot of decisioning that goes on in terms of, is this a valid invoice? Is it a valid purchase order? And in order to do that, it means that our Terminal One as a platform needs to go out and access data in a variety of places. And we rely on tools from in Jerry's camp. You know, our customers rely on the same types of tools to be able to get access to that data because of the notion of federated data. When transactions are incoming, as part of the validation process, you may have to go and hit, 3 to 7 different data sources in order to ensure that you're handling that transaction properly. And that involves either writing a lot of custom code or it involves, you know, seeking out better tools to enable the developer.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jerry, did you want to sort of take kicking the passage of sort of the picks and shovels here?
Yeah. What's interesting is that whether it's a corporate developer or independent software developer that's using XML for integration, there's a couple of different patterns that emerge. One is using XML to essentially build adapters, like what we've been talking about, the Terminal One product and custom-built adapters and get data into XML, if you will. Then the other is now you have some data and you want to do something with it, but you've got to build back to these federated views. And when we work with independent software vendors, a lot of what we're doing is helping them, their customers, really take information and further combine it with other systems for purposes that neither the vendor nor the customer may have known up front. You know, they're just kind of figuring, well, now I've got this data and this data over here, and I've got someone who can actually consume it in my management team in some way we haven't thought of before. And so the ability to pull data together from disparate sources without having to worry about where that data, how that data has been structured or how it's stored or whatever, I think is where this XQuery technology we've been talking about earlier is going to come into play. That's what really excites me.
I think just to quickly build on something that Jerry was saying, Ron, when you think about data coming into the organization and the amount of time that is spent, no matter how good your integration efforts are, the amount of time that's spent going out to source data from a variety of places. I think Jerry talked about the 70% ratio. We have customers we've actually seen where it's even higher than that. That's a very big issue, which is why XQuery is a very, very important piece of technology. The other thing is, and I think this is very, very important, a lot of times when architects and developers are looking at technologies to bring together, they often get frustrated by sometimes what we see is a lack of specialization. Like you'll see products that try to take on too much, and so they end up being not, they do a lot of things but not very well, versus putting together products that sort of align. And when you look at things like Terminal One and XQuery, these are two products that don't overlap at all. They complement each other. We depend, in fact, XQuery for our customers takes a lot of pain out of implementing our product because, we rely on, we it's part of process for us to route transactions when we, when they're coming in through the internet. Our product requires data in a consolidated view. Now, either you go off and write that consolidated view handler yourself and serve it up to us, or which is then something you have to maintain, or you seek a better strategy in the case of XQuery. This is why it's so important, and I share Jerry's excitement on that end.
So let's sort of circle back to the topic of SOA a bit and try to tie this together either with SOA as an architectural approach or with the loose coupling of service interfaces, which might be sort of a more sort of a tactical question. So how do these data integration issues and basically the picks and shovels we were talking about, how does that feed into the topic of loosely coupled services? I know, Patrick, you were talking about building web service interfaces for B2B data integration. And, how does that all fit together?
Well, the I think, and Jerry talked about this earlier as well. I mean, there are organizations have reached a point where there is, you know, a boatload of data and new business models, new ways of doing business that folks, you know, on the marketing or executive side dictate to us on the development side. Look, we want to do business this way. We want to transact with this so-and-so. That puts pressure on us to integrate, you know, data from all over the place. And this is what's, you know, so we're trying to leverage existing legacy assets that we have. And the best way to do that is to take a SOA approach whereby you build wrappers around things and you can tie them together. However, that doesn't address the issue of now how do I transact electronically with a greater number of business partners. So if you can expose a web service, you know, publicly on the web, on the internet, that your trading partners can then pass transactions to and from, you've now opened the window for transacting electronically with a greater number of people. It drives down your cost of operations. I mean, the last time I checked, I think for each transaction that a company typically, you know, processes manually on paper, it's about an average cost of about $40. And if those transactions are sort of small margin transactions, which in this case most of them would be, for those that are being done manually, you know, it's you're really eating into your margin of profit for doing that particular order. So there's definitely a push on to do a lot more electronic messaging through the internet than we're currently doing, you know, through the traditional EDI channels. In fact, the latest stat I saw from the analyst community was that the volume of electronic messages for transactions is going to double in the next 3 years, and we're not going to be able to handle that, of course, through traditional EDI networks. So we're definitely seeing some growth there.
Well, Jerry, what's your take?
Actually, I was listening to Patrick. I was thinking that maybe I ought to talk just a little bit. The implication really at the developer level, just to counterpoint that a little bit, because I think there's a dynamic down there too. That means more and more of these web services are going to have to get built. XML is a new language that people have to learn to in order to package some of this stuff up. So when you look at the DataDirect XQuery implementation, for example, one of the other emerging standards that goes along with that is a standard called XQJ. So as which will let you embed that XQuery inside a Java program. So you might imagine a workflow that you're using some visual mapping tool to map the EDI into XML or XML document A to XML document B. It's generating the XQuery. You know, you're testing that XQuery against your underlying data sources. You're generating the Java code, including the XQJ API, so it can what goes into the API itself, so it can be embedded into a higher-level Java program. Maybe that's getting set up as a web service. In fact, maybe your XQuery is calling a web service, which is calling another XQuery, which is calling a web service. You get sort of like the Kachinka doll effect. You know, what's inside of one is inside of another. And so I think what it does is it lets you actually get to that point where you're building these loosely coupled components that, assuming that they're reasonably well-defined and understood, you get to that point where you can be combining data and flowing information in new and novel ways. So that's what we're trying to pay attention to is at the tool and component level, make sure this stuff works really well so that the kind of applications and the kind of rapid change in productivity that Patrick is describing can actually be accomplished.
Yeah, you have to... When Jerry talks about you know, deploying, building all these web services interfaces, you know, you get you can, you know, without having the, you could, well, you can introduce a new set of management or maintenance challenges in the absence of having the proper tools to build them and maintain them. So, you know, the loosely coupled, there's always a trade-off, I guess, between loose coupling or coupling and the degree of maintenance you have to do to maintain a cohesive system. It's something you really, really need to think about when you're going down the SOA path, which is, you know, am I going to be able to maintain these interfaces? Am I going to be able to change them quickly? And if you...
Am I going to keep track of all the stuff I just
built?
Keep
track of all the stuff I just built. Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's one of the things we're all learning about is the difference between control and freedom.
Yep.
There's always some sort of balance between the two. But actually, Patrick, you also brought up an interesting subject. You're talking about how much people were spending on, you know, the paper-based processes, and it's like $40 a person or something. You know, probably
mm-hmm.
depends on the
$40 a transaction. Yep.
Yeah, per transaction, it probably depends on the transaction, but still, it's pretty significant. You know, one of the things we've been taking a look at is sort of the spending habits of companies, and it seems to me that even though the data issues rank very high among a lot of the problems around integration, companies tend not to spend that much money on the data integration pie. It looks like a lot of the money they spend is on that infrastructure, the network, the operations, you know, the middleware and things like that, but not very much in the data. You know, what are you guys seeing as far as, you know, spending habits now and where you'd like to see them in the near future?
Well, I think that you're bang on in terms of the spend on the network and on the ERP infrastructure tools and things like that. The challenge that companies, I think, now are really, I mean, certainly our customers with the Terminal One product have, you know, I mean, it's been around a couple of years and we've had some good success with it. Those that are moving on to the, I guess, I think it's version 3.0, are raving about it. But the thing is that what they're trying to address is, well, how do I go from, you know, back office in one place to back office in another? So I've got, I've got a big investment here in terms of back office systems, ERP, that can process the transactions. I'm faced with, if I want to transact with a greater number of players, I have to implement my own sort of, you know, transaction routing, data transformation strategy, to be able to transact with a greater number of partners because their formats don't match mine. And that's the next wave of tooling with regard to B2B transacting in an SOA world, right? I mean, that's, you know, I need to, I may have a great investment in my SOA strategy, or I've got a pretty big SOA deployment in terms of, well, infrastructure deployment. What I need to do now is look at, okay, what types of application, what types of technologies exist for transporting transactions between, you know, disparate ERP systems exist. And, you know, I really shouldn't be building that stuff myself. I can go out and buy a platform that plugs into a SOA architecture and does it for me and lets me manage that effectively. If your companies what our customers tell us is, well, look, you know, you've got to have an XML focus at the core. You've got to have a web services focus at the core, and we really don't want to see. Don't try to solve. You know, don't come in here with a B2B gateway product that's, you know, I'm going to have to do a lot of customization to integrate because it doesn't plug directly into my SOA framework.
So Jerry, what do you think as far as this buying behavior around data integration?
Well, buying behavior is one thing. Spending habits are another. And if you really look at what I was saying earlier in terms of the 70% of a systems integration project being hand coding, they're spending an awful lot of money on data integration.
Mm-hmm.
That's just in another form.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what Patrick's saying, to educate the industry as to options like Zenos offers, it can bring other components to bear, save them that work, tools and components like we bring to market with Stylus and DataDirect Query that can at least ease the burden of that work, make it more productive, and actually give them new ways to do that work.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of the angle we're taking at it.
Yeah, but it looks like a lot of that spend, you know, to use the analogy, is that, you know, they're just putting more people behind the cart to push it up the hill and
haven't
figured out that they should probably, like, think about adding another horse up front to pull it. And the question is, you know, it's an interesting buying behavior, but, you know, it's like people tend to go for the flash of the, you know, the ERP systems and networks and, you know, application infrastructure, but seem not to see the same sort of flash in data integration for whatever reason.
Well, the other thing that we see happening out there, though, is people are coming to realize that not only is it never ending, the rate of change is increasing. So I think this issue you're talking about in terms of spending on data, not lack of spending on data integration, is one that comes to the fore anyhow, because that's just what the businesses require.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point for us to summarize, I guess, Jason. Right?
Yeah, the rate of change. Jerry's bang on the rate of change. It's a big problem for the developer community within an organization, because they're in a constant state of being asked to change direction, you know, add a business partner. Now we need to do this. We need to validate it that way. We want to bolt this on here. You know, if you're gonna stay competitive, you've got to be able to at least keep pace with the rate of change. And if you want to accelerate beyond it, great. But if you're doing, you know, if you're trying to do it all manually without the proper tooling, you are going to fall behind. So those are things to consider. Absolutely.
Well, great.
Well, very good.
Well, it's probably time for us to summarize a bit here and kind of give us our final thoughts on what we see. Jason, you wanted to take a stab as to what we've learned from this podcast?
I guess the one sentence that sort of sticks in my mind is that data miners need picks and shovels. I thought that was just sort of a great way of putting metaphors together. But that definitely is something we're seeing. We were also talking about the shell game as a metaphor as well. So we're doing a great job of mixing our metaphors, where we have picks, shovels, miners, and shell games. But if you put together what really the story is, that data integration always involves hard work, and you can leverage new technologies, whether it's XQuery or other approaches, SOA, loosely coupled web services. You still have this hard work that has to be done in order to sufficiently resolve some of the knottier issues of data integration. And that was interesting that came to the fore in this discussion.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I got out of this is that, you know, obviously we spent a lot of time talking about an SOA and web services, just, you know, making the interfaces to systems easier, making it easier to compose services together, to build new business applications, to respond to ongoing pressures of change. But it's clear that if we aren't thinking about that same sort of flexibility as it applies to the underlying, you know, infrastructure, sort of the analogy, another good analogy was that, you know, if we're building these cities and we're building lots of skyscrapers, but we're not really bothering to spend any time on the road and the energy infrastructure, at some point we're going to hit the wall where our consumption of energy is going to exceed our supply, and I think we're hitting that same sort of wall here, where at some point making the barriers between systems lower only increases our demand for making the efficiency of getting to that data even higher. So hopefully we're going to see some of these spending habits change a little bit, so that they're not spending after the fact on tightly coupled data, but rather spending a little bit more. So maybe we can wrap up a little bit of this Zapform podcast and tell you a little bit about what's going to happen in the next one.
Right, so our next podcast, our February podcast, which will be available early in the month of February, features Silverkite and MindReef, and the topic is getting a handle on designing, debugging, and enforcing service policies in SOA. And we'll be looking to our experts from these companies to help us talk about, essentially, about the service lifecycle, both creating services as well as operating services in a production environment. And there's a lot of interesting developments and new best practices being uncovered in the SOA lifecycle arena. So we're definitely looking forward to talking with these folks to dive more into these topics.
Now, we also know we are moving to a new format, so we'd like to get your feedback on this podcast. If you preferred the live version and maybe you want to get these two guys back live so you can ask them your own question or maybe you want to follow up with them, please let us know. If you prefer the podcast version, you know, let us know. Vote with your feet. You know, recommend this to your friends. Syndicate it. Let us know. You can download these online. We'll be making this available, obviously, when you're listening to it now. We're going to make it available as soon as we can. So our next podcast will be available in February. And if they're easy to do, we might increase the pace. But we'd like to hear from you. But once again, I'd like to thank our two guest experts. Thank you very much, Jerry and Patrick, for participating with us today.
Yeah, and Jerry and Patrick, why don't you sign off with maybe your email address so that people, quick, get your pens now and write these down if you want to contact these folks. So go ahead. Patrick, why don't you start?
Sure. Thanks again for having me on. And you can reach me at Zenos. My email address is psmith, all one word, at Zenos, xenos.com.
Thank you.
And Jerry?
And Jerry King, I'm at jking@datadirect.com. Sorry, jking@datadirect.com. I need to know my own email address.
It's always a good thing.
No problem. Well, thank you all very much, and hopefully we'll all see you on our next webcast podcast coming up in February.